Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to actor and writer Amy de Bruyn.
So the classic question is, like, if you could go back in time and have that chat with your younger self when you were striving and... You know, it was tough. I would imagine there were plenty of tough times.
Yeah.
What would you say to that younger Amy?
It will happen. It will happen. And the quicker you learn to enjoy yourself and be happy now, the quicker it will happen.
Amy is married to Sean and they've two kids, daughter Billy and baby son River. And in this conversation, we speak about motherhood, her powerful march for maternity speech, being authentic, TV show Line of Duty, her love of yoga, and why ladybirds are important to her. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. Here it is.
Amy, thanks a million for being here.
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
I know it's hard because, like, no more than myself, you have two smallies.
Yes.
And they're very close in age.
Yes.
And like, trying to leave the house.
Yeah.
This is an achievement that we're here.
Oh, it's a huge achievement, actually, even this morning, because we swapped it. Usually Sean brings Billy to Montessori and I was bringing her this morning. And there was about 17 disasters before we even got her to the door of Montessori. And then I'm like, bye, I'm free. And then that feeling of, like, you just land then after you sort of hand them over is actually a really wonderful feeling.
Yeah. And this is my first outing.
Oh, my God.
So today we're recording this at the beginning of February. And my little girl is 12 weeks today, actually. So Billy is 2.5.
Yeah, yeah.
And then baby River is 4.5 months. Am I right?
Yeah, just turned 4 months.
Oh, four months.
Oh, maybe it is 4.5 now. Like, I've gotten to the point where...
I know, I'm going to have to stop counting in weeks.
Yeah, exactly. No, I had to stop. I was like, I don't know what this means anymore. Well, you're talking to a full-on 80s parent here. I think I've just taken on my mother's approach way too much. So I'm real, like...
Laid back.
Oh, my God.
But that's good.
Yeah.
Because they pick up on her vibe, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, totally. Like, or if she... It's so funny. Even if me and my husband, John, are having, like, a conversation, and we're not arguing or anything. We might be talking about something that we're both passionate about. Like,
sure.
It's something, and she's always like, no, yeah, stop it. Quiet, everyone. Sit. And you're like, oh my God, like, we're only just having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, it's like if the energy just raises slightly, like, they totally know.
Yeah, totally know. And I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm more laid back in with number two than I was ever with my first boy,
yeah,
who's now four.
Yeah. Oh, I think so. I think it's just, you don't...
You don't worry as much. Because it's mental.
You've no time. So you're just kind of going, and that's it as well. You're not preempting anything. You see them like if he's just like sitting in that chair thing, happy out, while I'm trying to fix something for Billy, I'm like, he's grand. Like, whereas before with Billy, I would have been like, she looks like she's starting to mooch, I think.
Yeah,
Shall we? Like, no. Like, if he is happy, he's happy. I'm done with that. You know, it's fine.
Yeah. So I know you're... you're working, you're doing what I suppose a working actor does, which is trying to keep the show on the road and be a parent at the same time. So absolute kudos to you for that. But I really want to start with that speech that you gave back in October at the Better Maternity Care March. I wanted to be there in person. Unfortunately, I wasn't, but I was certainly there in spirit. And I cried so many tears over your speech, and I still get goosebumps when I think about it, because you spoke so incredibly well. It was so powerful. And the fact that you had given birth to your baby boy just 2 weeks previous was, I think, just took everybody's breath away. Mm-hmm. That, you know, this was so important to you to be there. And you spoke on behalf of so many women and couples and the people impacted by the pandemic and how women have been treated, and partners. And I have, you know, been one of them too, so I get it.
Yeah.
I've had a baby pre-pandemic, and having one during restrictions, it was different.
Yeah, night and day. Like, even if the restrictions slightly eased a bit, which they did for us, like, it still was a completely different experience.
Yeah.
And it's even so funny that you say that about speaking on behalf of so many women, because I think that's what I didn't have time to write that speech, essentially, because I'd just given birth.
Of course, and
Linda from Better Maternity Care was kind of like, I know it's a lot to ask, but would you be willing to speak? And my instinct just went, yes. And then it was like sort of the night before it landed, and I was going, oh God, I'm like, you want me to write something? Oh Jesus. So I remember I just tuned in. All I could think of was I just tried to just tune in to how everybody felt, how all the women, all the men, all the couples, everything, you know, felt. And it just kind of poured out of me. And I think there was one line I sent it to my mom, and my mom was just like, yeah, that's brilliant. And just that line is just repeating the point. So maybe lose that one. And I was like, you're totally right. I know the line you're talking about. Ditch that one line. And then that was it. So it was kind of as simple as that, but as powerful as that, because on some level, I definitely felt like I had a responsibility to speak on behalf of all these people. And I couldn't believe how moved I was once I got there. Because you're shaky anyway, you've just given birth, even though I kind of was barreling through going, I'm grand, it's fine, I'll just do this. When I got there and I just saw the people and the kids and the babies and people that just shouldn't have had to experience this. And knowing my experience on Billy and that it was a tricky L birth, though, and knowing that I had kind of a positive outlook on it because my partner was there the entire time, and it ended up being like, oh, it was fine, you know. Then going now with, you know, going with River the second time, I was kind of going, no, I'm sorry, this is not right, this is not fair. And with our history of how we treat women in this country, that really landed with me. And which is really funny, because I think a few weeks before, even my original Instagram video where I put out about kind of like going, hang on, what's going on here? Why have we not been mentioned in all of this?
Yeah.
I think I was about 7 months pregnant at the time. And a few weeks prior to that, I had actually been talking to my eldest sister, who's very kind of passionate about kind of lots of issues and will always speak up about things. And I was actually saying to her, God, I really don't. We're so different in that way. I really don't feel the need to in that kind of way.
Yeah.
But for some reason, this just like poured out of me. I just kind of, I couldn't stay quiet about this one. Really couldn't.
I know you've used the word power and instinct, and I know from never meeting you in person, but just, you know, getting a snapshot into you from looking at your Instagram or hearing you speak about your love of yoga, it sounds like you're somebody who is good at tuning in to like who you really are and perhaps to something a bit deeper. I feel that sometimes you can channel energies and the feeling. I think for you, perhaps that kind of, okay, what do I want to say here? And you just let it flow through you. We'll hear it now in a second. We are going to play it. But that feeling of, that's grand, as we do.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be okay. That's okay. And sure, isn't it better than X, Y, and Z? And sometimes that's just not good enough.
No.
To say it's grand. It's not actually grand.
No, it was so not grand. That was the thing. It was really, yeah. And I think something that is good about myself, I think, is that or a talent in inverted commas that I have would be from my
own
writing.
Don't, like, you're doing an Irish thing of,
like I would have written kind of one woman shows for years, and that was kind of where I kind of allowed me to come back to Ireland and allowed me to make a little bit of a mark here and very slowly kind of become part of, I guess, an acting scene or whatever over here. But with my shows, it was always about my writing was not to give myself a gig or so I'll be famous and people will know something about me. It was just always try and speak about something greater. And I always felt that with my writing, it was coming through me. And that's why even I love that there's an Elizabeth Gilbert talk. I think everyone's seen it at this stage where she's talking about the writer's channeling, and the genius used to be this kind of mystical thing that lived in the walls and you would almost kind of, you know, coax it in and it would come through you. Whereas then at some stage of the kind of some revolution or whatever, the person became the genius, and that's when the mental health problems started because it was too much power and people were putting too much pressure on these humans, mere mortals, when it was something else, something bigger they were channeling. So I've always felt that with my writing, and that's why my writing is not something that I do all the time, but I do when I feel called to do it. And that's something that I felt like with this speech, I was like, oh, well, I know how to tune in. Like, I know how to get that. Like if it's how I process things. Like, even I remember when my great auntie died, she was in her 90s, but she was kind of like our grandmother, really. And so huge a part of our lives. And I remember, like, literally the morning she died, I was like, I just like wrote this kind of speech about her, and I ended up saying it at the funeral. Uh-huh. It's like, it's how I feel like a thing that I'm able to do is distill, you know, kind of gather up that information maybe, or gather up that energy and distill it into kind of a very succinct way.
Yeah,
perhaps.
You're a natural communicator.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I suppose. Which is weird to me because my innate personality always feels a little bit shy.
But introverted.
A bit introverted, yeah, for sure. But yeah.
So that day, did you stand up as Amy, or did you kind of step into like one of your characters, as it were?
Total character. Like, okay. As in a role or a...
embodiment.
Embodiment. Like, I knew I was there for something bigger. So I was not there.
You were there as a collective, but using your voice to speak for so many of us.
And then it feels easier as well. It feels easier rather than me going up and putting all that pressure on myself. I kind of felt like, okay, we're all here.
I felt like together.
I was gathering everyone. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's listen to it.
What I will say is that no one wants to be here. Like, in the nicest possible way, not one person is here today because they had nothing better to do. I certainly like to be sitting in a warm, dry cafe with my husband and my two-year-old daughter and my two-week-old son. Yes, 2 weeks old. But... but how can I, when I know that across Ireland, so many other women's needs for maternity care are not being met? This country has a long and checkered history with the mistreatment of women in our society. And it can be exhausting. And unless this issue is staring you directly in the face, it's so easy not to look at. Like, I did it myself. I would say, oh, well, thank God I had my first baby when my partner could be there with me. And sure, by the time I'm having my second, everyone will be fully vaccinated, so it won't affect me. And sure, didn't our mothers do it without their partner? So it'll be fine. It'll be grand. It'll be grand. It'll be grand. It'll be grand. No, it won't be grand. Here, we have to be here. So listen up. The one thing that connects us all is, in order to get here, to be born, someone, a woman, gave birth to you. It is an important job. It is an essential job. So wouldn't you like to give that woman the respect and support she deserves in one of the most important and essential jobs she will ever do.
Amy, every time, and that's only a clip, a part of your speech, but every time I hear it, I feel so much admiration for you. I'm sure your own family, your husband, everyone that knows you are bursting with pride, but also a huge sense of gratitude that you you did that for us, for everyone. And then, once again, it's not just about women, it's about all of us. And I don't know how many times I felt so much compassion for first timers during the pandemic, because, you know, any of us who have had a kid before the restrictions came in know that it's a bloody scary thing to think about giving birth anyway. But coupled with restrictions and not having your partner with you, mother of God. So huge respect to everyone who birthed babies during the time. And now it feels strange because while we're meant to be out the other side of it, restrictions are still a thing.
Yeah.
And women like Linda, who runs the Women Ascend Instagram page, and others like her are still fighting the fight.
Yeah. They're the people that I kind of, without being too, like, they're the real heroes. But like they are, like, because they're the people whose babies are toddlers now, who they don't need to be doing this. Like they don't, but they're just so compelled to help, and they can't see anybody else go through it. Because even, she's even said to me, like, you know, when River was born, she's like, dip in and out, don't be feeling like you need to, you know, like, look after yourself. That's important too. And she's thinking of that, of me, and she's still fighting the good fight. It's just, it's incredible. And
it raises a bigger conversation about how women are still treated here. And we have moved on so much, and it's great. And, you know, we repealed the Eighth Amendment, and, you know, gay marriage is celebrated now, but nonetheless, I think for a lot of people as well, it was probably, depending on their own circumstance, it was really traumatizing, actually. And the way COVID was used, and it's certainly not something I said before, but I will say it now, was used as an excuse.
Oh, like
the greatest excuse.
I had people messaging me who had actually had nurses in the hospital say to them, you know, well, it's actually easier.
Oh, it's easier.
Without the partners here, to be honest with you. You know, so there is a want there to not have them, the partners in the way. And I think that's what really kind of struck me as unjust. And that's why I had to speak up, because I was going, no, I'm sorry. I don't think this is just a COVID thing, because we all did it. We all played our part. We all, you know, and everyone was willing at the beginning. Kind of people were really sacrificing things and going like, okay, that's fine. My husband won't be able to be there. Or, you know, my niece was born in the March, just a few days before lockdown. So like we all barely got to see her in the first couple of months of her life, but we're all willing to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it just got to a point where it was like, well, hang on, where does the buck stop here? Nothing makes sense. And then even when I was going in having River, and that's only in September, great, the coom had opened up now, still not to the full extent that it had before. But other hospitals across the country were opening up for an hour. Like we're allowing the partners in for an hour at a time, like an hour per day.
Mm.
Like it just didn't make sense.
No sense.
No.
And I remember asking about, you know, have medical interventions, have they increased? And it was like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh God. The roof. I'd had an emergency C-section on Billy. And then with River, I was having a planned C-section.
Yeah.
And although it was, you know, it wasn't solely because, you know, because of the restrictions that decision was made, but you cannot say it doesn't have an impact, you know, because I was kind of going, OK, well, grand, you know, I don't want the same thing to happen. That might just be how my body reacts to labour. I don't want the same thing to happen again on River, where I go to the very end of labour and just before I'm about to push, I have to be sent down for an emergency C-section. That's not ideal. And it's very hard on you. So I'm going, OK, well,
imagine.
Yeah. And then I'm kind of going, but also the great benefit and the thing that I can comfort myself with throughout this whole pregnancy is I know Sean will be there, because we'll know exactly what time I'm going in. And also, and that's the other thing as well, you know, that's the problem as well. Like, a C-section isn't the easy way out. I've had both an emergency one and an elective one. And I can say on the emergency one, I found the emergency one easier because I was high as a kite. I was at the end of a process. I'd gone through an entire journey to have my baby. And then at the very last minute, it was like, this is the safest thing to do. And I'm off my face. So I'm like, yeah, grand, whatever. You know, just do whatever you need to do. This is wonderful. And then, but obviously going in very sober,
right,
having River, walking onto and sitting up onto an operating table where they're going to now is, I found personally very, very difficult. Like, I felt a bit kind of like, tugged at afterwards. I kind of felt a bit like, oh God, that was a different experience again. So, you know, and people are probably, hopefully they're not, but, you know, people could be making decisions like that because they're kind of going, well, you know, at least then I know he's there, or she's there or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I know that was intense, and I can feel the energy. Just it riles you up because you're clearly a passionate person and somebody whose moral compass is very finely attuned.
I was saying to one of my sisters the other day, I was going that thing, you know, because I'd been thinking just about things about being authentic and what authenticity means and being honest and truthful. And I was saying, is that our family thing? Like, is that the girls thing? Because I was going, it has to be real. It has to be genuine. I have to be honest.
You don't do shit talk.
No, I really don't. And then my sister Ashley was like, oh no, that's us, Amy. That's our family. Like, because she was going, other people, like, she was going, like, they're happy to kind of keep a few things under the surface. And she was like, I think that's just an us thing.
You're a straight shooter. So I would imagine if I'm your pal, you're going to tell me the truth, whether I like it or not, but you're always going to, I'm going to, if
I want, you ask me for an honest answer.
You're in your 30s.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in my 40s, early.
Late 30s over here. So we're
but I definitely have found that as well, that, as you know, I feel I'm very different to my 20s, but in the sense that I probably am more myself than I ever was, because you get more comfortable in your own skin. Some people like you, some people won't, and that is totally cool.
Yeah, I think that's it, because I definitely think my 20s were a funny old time. Like, I was kind of trying to find myself.
You were striving, probably, in the acting world.
Oh, totally. And like, and I'm so ambitious and was so hard on myself, and I was grafting and working and like constantly writing things, putting on things myself with very little support. And I don't mean like family or friend support. I mean more kind of support from kind of I never felt like I was a part of anything. I felt like I was just like a little lone kind of wolf and figuring stuff out myself, and it stood me in great stead now for my career, for sure. But I think that was a lot of my 20s, was like striving and then kind of worrying, oh God, people don't really like me. Oh, I'm not a lot, but I think I didn't suffer fools gladly. So maybe that kind of came across, or I seemed a huge thing. Actually, with my friends, was always like in my 20s, because I spent so much of them single, was like, you're very intimidating to men. You know, these ones, I was like, oh God. So I always felt a bit like I was probably...
Intimidating in what way, I wonder?
I don't know. I wonder, is that just an excuse that people say, do you know? But I probably...
Because you know yourself.
but I probably wouldn't kind of... I just can't do the bullshit kind of stuff. So I suppose kind of any of the... And also, I'm probably not a very good flirt either, which my husband likes to tell me all the time. I was definitely not a good flirt. I'm pretty more like... I suppose a relationship was not something I needed. I think that's probably what that meant for people, or what they were picking up. It was not something, you know, some people love being in a relationship and constant and can't be in one without then going straight into another.
Yeah.
I kind of didn't feel that, you know.
Good on you.
I would have liked it. Oh, sure. Like, and when all my friends are like coupled up for weddings and stuff, yeah, that would have been nice at times. But I think I had other things. I had other fish to fry. I was focusing on my career. I was doing this, I was doing that. So kind of the relationship I always kind of had in my head, I want that to be a bonus. I wanted to add something to my life as opposed to just somebody for the sake of it. But that would be very drilled in from my mother. Like, my mother would be kind of, you know, very, feminist, I guess, in that
way.
Great.
Yeah. Well, if I was your husband listening to this, I would find that a compliment in the sense that you're clearly not somebody who is going to settle for anything other than, yeah, this is it.
Yeah. And I think, funny, we always say we were kind of both like that. And then we both kind of were like, oh, yeah, it's not that we want a relationship. It's like we kind of feel like, oh, no, this has something in it. This, you know, is something. Yeah, this could be a good thing, you know, and as a result, I feel like we have a good balance, like that we are able, particularly because we were both so ambitious when we first met each other. We're both very good at kind of supporting each other in
and
what
understanding.
We want to do. Yeah,
because he's not an actor, but he's in the business.
Yeah, so he originally trained as a director and then opened a few years ago a storyboarding and kind of illustration company. And then
so you're both creatives.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to, oh God, have some sort of understanding. Otherwise, it just wouldn't work.
Like, no, because your days can look completely different from week to week.
Yeah. And I can literally turn, like, I have to sometimes be like, okay, so I have like 5 weeks of filming here. So, and I'll be popping up here to like, or I'll be going to Belfast. So can you, we have to just come together and figure it out and, you know, and make it work basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk to you about. And obviously your acting career has really taken off in recent years. Like you've done so much cool stuff. You've been in Coronation Street. You've been in Vikings. You're in one of the Jason Bourne movies. And of course, you appeared as Steph Corbett in Line Duty. Like the rest of the world, major fans in our house of the TV show. Your accent is so amazing. Obviously, I'm not Liverpudlian, but I would imagine anyone from Liverpool would say you nailed it.
Yes, I have. Well, apart from probably about 3 trolls on Twitter.
Okay. But, cheers, guys. We love those trolls.
I love them. They're so kind. But no, I've had some good responses even from like Stephen, who is from Liverpool, who was the actor playing my husband originally. And then even like, you know, for every one of those trolls, then like I remember I was doing a voiceover at the time and satellite over to the UK, and the guy was actually from Liverpool, and he was like, I didn't realize that it was you, and I thought you were from Liverpool. And I was like, thank God. So yeah, it's been genuine, like across the board, quite positive. And then I think people, and that was kind of a really nice thing that people only really in the second series that I was in started to realize I was Irish. Is really nice because I feel like that's very in keeping with how my career has always been. Just been sort of quietly ticking away, doing bits, not sort of being noticed too much, which is good and bad. Like it's lovely to get the recognition, but it's also quite nice when you're a little bit of a surprise to people.
Yeah, how do you handle fame?
I don't, because I don't feel like I am.
Do you not?
No, not at all. I think it might have been different, particularly with this job. I mean, like Line of Duty.
But you are.
Am I?
I hate to tell you.
I did have some lovely girls. I met. I was having coffee with my sister in Dundrum, and we got chatting to these two girls because both our babies were kind of the same age. And I was like, God, people are lovely, aren't they? I was like, this is lovely. Like, mammy's chatting. And then at the end, one of them was like, do I know you from the telly? Were you on Line of Duty? And I was like, yes. And so me and my sister were like, I'm famous. I think as well, because of the way Line of Duty went, and it was in the pandemic and everything.
It was such a huge show. I mean, it got like, top ratings
I think over the last 10 years and all this.
Yeah.
But because we were all indoors, I don't think I felt anything from it.
Yeah.
I wonder if it would have been different had we all been kind of able to go into studios and stuff. Because even a lot of the press I was doing was all like
online. Yeah.
So you're kind of like,
you can get to bask in the Line of Duty glory.
No, not really. So, and I like a lot of my kind of, you know, when you're like, oh, what will I wear to this interview? It's all from the like neck up. I was like, I'll put a lovely necklace on for this one.
Like, you have a wardrobe full of collars.
Yeah, exactly. I actually do. Yeah. Do you?
Love it. But, so obviously, you know, it wrapped up and people were kind of left wanting more. I know I am one of those. Yes. And I'm sure it's a question that's asked a lot. And they're saying, will it be brought back? No, yes, maybe. And it's all this kind of sense of mystery around it.
Yeah, I think that's how Jed likes to do it.
I know that even if you know the answer, you're not going to tell
me. No, I wouldn't if I knew, but I definitely
don't
know the answer.
But you say you're filming in Belfast.
Oh, no, I'm not filming at the moment in Belfast.
My brain is working overtime. I'm like, please.
But no, I hope it'll come back and myself. And I think he's left it open. And I think what Jed does is he's clever. Like, he's not, like it was a...
This is the creator of the TV show.
The creator, sorry, yeah. And he writes it and he creates it. And I think like it kind of basically, like, I don't think anyone was really... It wasn't ideal having to do it in the pandemic because we had started and we'd only filmed the first couple of episodes and the rest were supposed to be filmed and it was put on pause and then everything had to be sort of amended to suit the kind of COVID restrictions. So I hope it comes back. I feel like it would, but in a different, like in different circumstances, hopefully maybe when the pandemic's like completely over and they can, because I know the leads love doing it because they get to kind of hang out for a few months and have great crack.
Exactly. And it looks like they really do have great crack together. Now, I'm like, spoiler alert in a way, but look, it's a huge show. If you haven't seen it, you just skip through this part. But you were in season 5 and then obviously the last one. And your character could have wrapped up in season 5.
Yeah.
You know, if you watch it, you know what happens. But they decided to go a different direction, which I'm delighted about because it was a great old twist and a relationship that you develop with another character in season 6. I'm sure that's down to the fact that you impressed them effectively, I would imagine, went, let's try and keep her in.
Yeah, like I think when it seems like the creator, Jed, when something, if he likes something someone's doing, sometimes he'll often kind of include them. And originally in the series 5, I was only signed up to do, I think, 2 episodes. And he sent a message. He sent an email to me saying that he really liked what I was doing and was wondering would I come back for the finale. And I was like, yes,
brilliant,
absolutely. And that's a lovely thing. And the only reason I even mention that is if anyone is ever in this job, that those things do happen because they never happened to me. You know, like I'd always hear about people. My agent would always even tell me about like, oh, they were in this series for 1 episode and then they were picked up and you're like, yeah, sure. Like, is that ever going to happen? But it does happen and it's lovely when it does. And it's a real then testament to all those years before that you were kind of ticking away, which is lovely. And then I did it and I finished up and I kind of didn't think anything more of it. And then I just heard, I think I'd only just had Billy, my daughter, a few weeks or whatever. And I got a call kind of going, they're just wondering about availability because he's thinking of a storyline that will involve you. It's like, what? Yes, yes, 100 times, yes, yes. So
brilliant. So you filmed that.
Yeah.
And Billy was young, obviously. So that was mad juggle. Was it up and down?
Yes. But then the pandemic. So like, I think she was only, she might have been only 5 or 6 months. But yeah. I mean, Sean and her came up to visit and which was really nice. Brilliant. And so that kind of worked a bit. And then it was also nice getting to go away to film because it kind of gave me the space to think about everything and, you know, absorb stuff. And then the pandemic hit. So she was about seven months when the pandemic started. And then by the time we got back to filming, she was over a year old. So that was another kind of leap, which was just, you know, insane. So it definitely did become a juggle. And even going up then to Belfast the second time around after the pandemic, after kind of all she's really known is us for so long, that was kind of that was hard in a way, but also good in another way, because good for her to be able to kind of be surrounded by other people as well.
Sure.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You spoke about striving a lot in your 20s when you're, you know, pushing for work,
yeah,
and I would imagine going for auditions all the time. And I would imagine for a lot of people, it would be very easy. No, not easy. It wouldn't be easy at all. I'm sure it'd be very difficult. I'm sure there are plenty of people who are listening who would love to be in your position, but like it couldn't survive the constant trying and maybe getting knocked back and trying and getting knocked back. Mm. Was there a point for you where you went, is this it? Or, you know, will I keep on trucking? It's going to work. Was there an inner knowing that I'm bloody good at this? It is going to work out for me.
Yeah, I think so. There was always something there that I knew, and because I've always wanted to do it since I was like I used to act out scenes from films and everything in like when I was three. You know, like I was always kind of
performing
and living in that world and loved that world. So there was always a knowing that
this is my calling.
It's definitely my calling. But I think I had to definitely. And what all those years in my 20s taught me, I had to really refocus it and it not be about the fame and it not be about the sort of the exterior, the kind of like, you know, and now everyone will think I'm great and everyone will think, and I'll be famous and everyone will know how good I am. It had to be about something deeper. It had to be about it being about the calling, it being about the work, it being about loving the work. Finding ways to put my own work out there and touch people and hopefully people will feel something from it. And so it made all that striving made me look into the work deeper and explore characters in a different way and very much go back to kind of a childhood kind of love of acting and not just being about when I'm famous, people will know how good I am. And then I'll be happy because
I suppose that's all on an ego level.
Totally ego level. And then in order to get the good stuff, you have to be happy in the normal everyday stuff as well. You know, so it was kind of figuring all that kind of stuff out as well, if that makes sense.
It does. I know you're a lover of yoga as well. I suppose that practice helps to ground you. You seem like a pretty grounded person anyway. But
good, because I feel like I'm floating. You know, you've left your children, you're like,
ah. Yeah. Hey, absolutely. Absolutely. But the practice of yoga and connecting the breath to the body, to all of the bits and bobs, does that help you with your work?
Yeah. Oh, like I always, I just think it makes me a better actor. It makes me a better person and it makes me a better actor. Because I feel like if you want to explore all these characters and all these kind of facets of the human condition or whatever, you need to know yourself.
Yeah.
And that helps me know myself and
tune in
and just like the focus it takes and getting in touch with different parts of your body so that when you are embodying a different character, you can use your body and your physicality. Because there are some people who do just act from the neck up, you know, and that's fine and it works for them and they're probably gigging away happy out. But for me, I just love a full body experience.
Yeah, I love
to kind of get into the body of the character and feel what's different, what's not the same. And then also, even on another like random level, I think there's so much, you know, if you are in media or public eye, there's so much placed on your exterior and your outward appearance. And what yoga for me is really good at doing is really making me like my body from the inside out.
Yeah.
Like I'm kind of like, wow, look how strong I am. Look how good I am at this. Oh, I can, you know, or, you know, look what my body can do and look what it can do that it couldn't do a few months ago and that kind of very, and a gentle strength to it as well.
Yes.
It's not this kind of hard beating yourself off machines either.
Yeah, it's not that force.
No.
It's more about an inner power, yeah.
Yeah, so I just don't know why they don't do it more in drama schools and stuff like that, because it's, you know, and some people kind of go, oh no, I can't, it's too slow and too like, and I'm too in my head, and I'm kind of going, No, but there's other flows that might suit you. There might be kind of a more vinyasa kind of flow where you're kind of constantly moving. Maybe you need that to then go to this. You know, there's lots of different and lots of different teachers as well. Like, that's why I love even going to the yoga place that I go, though I'm constantly doing the online classes at the moment. But I, because of the teachers, because some days it's just lovely to get a little taste of other, you know, lots of different people and their way of, I guess, channeling it to you. Like, so, yeah, I love it. Like, I love it. And in the pandemic, oh my God, I was like, I got addicted, like, because it was the only thing. Like, it was just...
And I
would find myself writing after I do a yoga class in the pandemic because it felt like, it just felt like a release of something, you know. It was because there was nothing left, you know. It was, and it was a few minutes to myself where I was in myself and in my body, which was just divine, especially at that time when I had a little child pulling out me every 2 minutes.
Well, you said it there, being in your body and use the word flow, and that's what it's about, and people speak about, especially in your profession as well, being in flow. What does that mean to you when you're in flow?
When I'm in flow,
I suppose you were in flow that day you gave that speech. You know, when you're feeling like
it's like, it's just, I'm living it in real time, it's just happening, and I'm going with it with no resistance. Like, and when I'm doing a character, or if I'm playing a character, or I'm on stage, or even if I'm doing an audition and I'm acting with somebody, flow, it's so easy, and it is just that exchange of energy. It's you're receiving something and you're giving it, it's transforming and you're giving it back, and I guess it's like breathing. It's like, you know, it's a sense of breathing. So when I am in flow, I just feel like, I feel like I'm floating, but a really grounded floating. I just feel like it's just all, I'm exactly where I'm meant to be. Exactly where I'm meant to be. And I love that. Yeah.
I find it fascinating to observe people's personal rituals before taking to a stage to maybe give a talk, or, you know, a singer who might sing a song, or whatever it is. And I suppose I like to observe people. I'm a bit of a creep. But I've seen it at different things I've done, because I've been emceeing different events and introducing people, and I really do like to watch what, because everybody's different.
Yeah.
Some people are a bag of nerves and they hit the stage and they're like cool as a cucumber. Yeah. Other people are the opposite, and they're like joking and having the crack behind the scenes. They hit the stage and for the first minute or two there's a nervous energy until they chill. So everybody's different. I've seen breathing exercises, I've seen chant, I've seen prayers being said, I've seen people puke. No joke. It will name no names. What is your own process? Do you have a process?
Yes, like I would do kind of a physical warm up. So I would probably do some yoga and some stretches, and then there's a Michael Chekhov way of working, and it's not my method as such, but it's something that I really enjoy where you kind of,
for those listening, can you explain who he is?
He trained up with kind of Stanislavski, and where the difference between him and say Stanislavski was very kind of your own memories and digging into your own personal experiences, and Michael Chekhov is more imagination based. So like an imaginary center where the character leads from, an imaginary body, an atmosphere, dealing in atmospheres. So for me,
that resonated more for you.
It resonated more for me. It's more playful. It's more, I can get way more out of it. I can, because your imagination is sort of infinite, whereas your experiences are so limited. So that's why I always kind of leaned in that way.
Is that the kind of Beyonce, Sasha Fierce kind of idea where you can embody a different character?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It gives you this energy.
Yeah, because that can be so huge. It can be anything. So, and there's kind of archetypal movements and things and gestures that you can do that sort of get you in your body. And so I would kind of do a little bit of that. And then I go if it's a one person show, which often in theatre that I would be doing would be my own, I'd very much kind of just mark all the points. So I need little preparations, like I'm marking all the points. I know I hit this here, this here, and I kind of go through it in my head first, and then I go very quiet and I go very internal. And I just, and then a lot of that then just before I go on is just about connecting to the audience and just feeling their presence there. And then there's a sort of which is very Michael Chekhov as well, stepping across the threshold into into this space.
You step into it.
Step into it so that I feel, so that you're leaving all your, they kind of say, leave all your baggage at the door, step into it. You're in this new space now, connecting to these people. And then you can go back and pick up your baggage afterwards. And it for
cool.
me, it's a
Love
good
it.
Disconnect. Yeah. And I'd say probably now with having kids, it probably would come into its own because you're kind of, you know, up until 2 minutes before, you're changing pooey nappies and this and that. And then you're kind of expected to kind of switch. So it's a really nice kind of separation to be able to do. But yeah, I definitely need all those little kind of rituals for myself to.
So nobody can come near you before you hit the stage. Like, you're not going to go up to Amy and go, hi, how are you? Have the chat. You're like, I'm in my zone.
I probably will be able to have the chats, but then I kind of, you'll probably just see me sort of slink off.
Yeah.
I'll try to be polite and then I'll be like, but yeah.
I find it so interesting. That's just the reason I ask is I'm just fascinated by everybody's own personal process.
Yeah. And essentially all it is to make them feel safe. Like, that's all it is really, because it's
safety,
whatever.
Because
you're kind of going into this unknown space where it's, you know, it's hanging on you and whatever other performers are there, but you have your part to play. So there's a huge responsibility. So I guess you're just trying to, and everyone's is so different. And it is just a total mental thing of like, I just need to now find my little safe things that I, and it changes. And it also changes depending on the venue, depending on the production, depending on what you're doing. Because I did so many things like dinner theatre where I'd be in the corner of a room, people would be having their dinner and I'd be popping on afterwards and I'd have a tiny little corner to play in.
Yeah.
So in those situations, you're kind of altering your little safety measures for that, you know,
for that kind
of space. And so, definitely about just feeling safe to go and play, to go and kind of have no boundaries, I guess, in another way. Yeah.
You can't imagine I would say doing anything else. This is it. Or could you imagine doing anything else?
No, I really couldn't. Like, and I've never been able to. Like, even when people kind of go, "Oh, what's your plan B?" I'm like, I don't have one. Like, I just never had one. And I remember there was a point when I was feeling quite low again in my 20s. And I remember looking into doing kind of like, but more as a kind of a side job so that I can continue doing acting, like nutrition or something, because I'd be fascinated with the workings of the body. And I think that's all part and parcel even of being an actor, because you are, you know. So, that involved looking up a course and then being like, I think I'm still on their mailing list. And I'm like, no, that's the only reason it comes to mind. But nothing else. I've never... It's just, I feel the most like myself when I'm doing it. I feel so, so true to myself. When I'm doing it and I love that feeling of like, even when you're filming, a feeling like you're kind of holding a room, because you can do that on stage, but I love sometimes when you're on set and you might just feel like, oh, hang on, we're holding a room here. The scene is that we've got, and then afterwards, you know, people be like, that was really, and you're like, I know. Like,
you felt it.
Mm. And that's amazing because you don't see it. Like, it's like, obviously there's the scene that you see, but you don't see that little magic spark, but it's held everyone in that moment together in this mad shared experience. And it's just, oh, I love
That's
it.
Gorgeous.
Addictive.
You've done a lot of really cool gigs, but is there a dream gig? Is there a role that you would love to take on?
Oh God, a role that I'd love to take on. I don't know if there's a role as such. There's people I'd obviously like, there's like the Kate Blanchetts and the Meryl Streeps that I would just love to work with, you know?
Yeah.
And things like experiences like, I'm still obsessed with Mike Lee. Like, I love Mike Lee films.
Mm.
And he sort of builds a world from the ground up when he films. That's always been I'd love to do one of those films and that kind of stuff. But in terms of like a specific role, there's nothing really that I can think of, but it's more anything that kind of pushes me further out from myself, that doesn't feel like myself. And when I surprise myself, I'm going to go and film this film at the end of the month. And I remember when I was auditioning for it, I just had a sense of who she was. And then what I loved about it was then when I was auditioning, I surprised myself a few times. I was like, that's who she is. Oh, I love this. Oh, I love that she did that. I love that she did that. So those kind of things excite me, I suppose. Something that kind of pushes me and then excites me and surprises me, I guess. Yeah, which is, I always wish I had a better answer for those questions.
No, these are great answers. Yeah, and you wrote a play about an incredible woman who was born in Limerick, who, yes, again, like a lot of us, I had never heard of until I heard of your play. So you wrote a play called I See You about a woman called Lady Mary Heath.
Yes.
So for those listening, and I know you've probably said this a million times, but can you tell us a little bit about her? Because she was one hell of a woman.
Oh, she was incredible. And I still, yeah, that's been a whole journey in itself. She was the first female commercial pilot. She flew the length of Africa, was the first person to do that, first person to parachute out of a plane.
Yeah, first person.
Person, like not woman, person. Uh-huh. She was an incredible athlete and she campaigned for like the women's sports and Olympics and everything. She, like, there's so many different things. I'll probably forget half of them. And funnily enough, like, Amelia Earhart was actually a really big fan of hers and even bought her first plane from Lady Mary Heath. But the difference was Amelia Earhart's husband was like her kind of PR guy and used to got her set up in all these kind of events and stuff. And then often he would steal events kind of from Lady Mary Heath. So Lady Mary Heath would be going to this event as this big pilot and he'd end up kind of booking Amelia instead. So there was like, there's loads of layers.
Fascinating. She
was born in Limerick. Her mother was bludgeoned to death by her father who had mental health issues, who then was put in the mental institution in Dundrum. She witnessed it as a baby. Oh, like, so much. And so you see where her kind of, where the power in her came from.
I mean, if this is not, I know you wrote a play and it was a very successful, run of shows, but if this is not a movie.
I know. I wish I had the time. Because I remember a few people have said to me, have you thought about it or have you spoken to anybody about it? And I'm like, oh, I should really. Because like, she's incredible. And what was amazing about that, even that show was when you're talking about channeling somebody or like, I just felt her energy so deeply. And that's why, and there's often little times when like, one of the things on the stage was littered with like paper airplanes and Lady Mary Heath was trying to connect with this kind of modern day Mary. And she was using paper airplanes basically. And just after the pandemic break or the first lockdown and I was back filming Line of Duty, I was walking through Belfast and I was a bit kind of nervous. I was like, oh God, I have to go back in now tomorrow. This is going to be really nervous. And I shit you not, a paper airplane landed in my path. Like, it was just there. Now, okay, I don't know if it landed, but it was literally, sorry, I was walking and I just was like, it was literally in front of me and I was like, thank you, Lady Mary Heath. Like, I was just like, like a sign, just like, everything's going to be okay. We got this, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
But yeah.
And do you believe in signs?
Yeah, I do. I think you can hammer them home. Like, as in, like, if you kind of go, you know, when you really want to sign something to be a sign and you can really make it be a sign. I've done that in the past. That's definitely in my 20s. Where I'm like, I really should be with this guy. This is a sign. But no, I do. Oh, definitely. Or like...
But yeah, paper airplanes. They're not something that appear in front of you all the time.
My lucky little symbol is a ladybird, because my first ever one-woman show was kind of... there was a symbol in it of a ladybird. And I have footage of it. When I was auditioning for Line of Duty, my little nephew was helping me with the lines, like, you know, we were just messing about, and a ladybird landed on the script.
Oh.
And I remember just going, God, even if I don't get this job, that's a lovely sign. And I had no attachment to it. That was what was great. You know, sometimes when if you feel like you have a sign and then you're kind of like hell bent on making it, you know, it was kind of like, oh, isn't that lovely? Oh, that's a really good sign. Oh, I'll probably have a good time at that audition, you know? And so, yeah, mad. But so I definitely believe in science for sure.
And then on that attachment, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things I loved so I love yoga as well. And I trained as a yoga teacher, but I really loved this idea of the power of detachment.
Yes.
And the letting go and not feeling like that need, desire of I need this to work. You need, and that, I suppose you were in a lovely free surrendering kind of place where you were like, hey, I'm just going to go with this. And now I see, oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because it's, I think that's the problem, because we're, as humans, we're trying to constantly put meaning to everything and tie everything up in a neat little bow. And sometimes the sign is just the sign. It mightn't mean that you're going to get the thing or whatever, but it might, it's just a little bit of reassurance, which I think is a nice way to look at it. Because I think in the kind of struggling years, not that I don't struggle now, by Jesus, I do, but as in, like, you know, in the real struggling years, you'd be trying to kind of go, oh, that means that. Okay, Grant, you know, that means this. Okay, you know, because you were hanging on, and then nothing, there's no space, there's no room to breathe, and that kind of like constantly hanging on and not letting go. But that letting go is definitely a huge journey for me, or a huge, like it has been definitely, because it's been my, the fact that I'm so tenacious, or have such tenacity about if it was something I want is a gift, but then the not letting go can be the problem. So I need to always try to balance.
I get you.
The two, for sure. My mum says that I'm a, like a, she always says I'm like a little terrier when I, well, I used to be a little terrier when I wanted something. So I kind of grab onto it and then I'd kind of be like, wouldn't let go. It's like, let go of the idea of the thing that you want, or let go of the, you know, like I kind of can't be, I'm sort of, not narrow-minded, but kind of like one point of direction on something, and kind of single focused, and I have to remember to be like, no, let go and just see what happens. And so definitely better at that now that I'm a bit older. But yeah, when I was younger, not so much.
So the classic question is, like, if you could go back in time and have that chat with your younger self when you were striving and, you know, it was tough, I would imagine there were plenty of tough times.
Yeah.
What would you say to that younger Amy?
Oh, it will happen. It will happen. And the quicker you learn to enjoy yourself and be happy now, the quicker it will happen. Does that make sense?
Nice, yeah. And that's the same for all of us, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's enjoying the here and now, the right now, not the looking ahead all the time.
Yeah, because then you don't enjoy, that's the thing as well. Then when you get the things, you don't enjoy them because you're then worrying about the next thing, you know. So you get the job you wanted, or you get the gig, or, oh, I'm going to be on this show. And then you're kind of going, yeah, but I mean, what do I have in a month's time then after that show's finished? Like, it's like, oh, it's a never ending, like it's hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the most important thing to you in life?
Oh, I have to say family now, don't I? Like, what's the most important? Yeah, it is family, really. Like, yeah, I suppose if we're like, obviously there's the family or people, I guess. But like, if you're thinking of the core value, I think it's the authenticity thing that I've been just, it's really been playing up for me a lot recently. And I think there's
a need for it as well. I think a lot of us are probably, I'm certainly speaking from my own perspective, I'm tired of the fakery that I see online, on social media accounts. And I'm bored. It's like enough now.
Yeah.
And a lot of us can see through it. And then some, maybe not so much, and buy into it. And I think, I think audiences or people or whatever are very discerning, but sometimes it's very easily to be manipulated, particularly if you're in a vulnerable place. And I think when things are having, I know I'm kind of speaking in riddles, but I feel like if you have a profile and a public profile, there's a sense of responsibility that comes with that to keep it real. And you're doing that. And even though I would imagine you value your private life very much and you separate your work life to your real life, but you're still using your voice in a very real way. Some people will like it. Some people won't get it. And that's okay. But I think that's what I'm craving from people I follow. I'm craving, I don't care whether our lives are completely different and we have completely opposing opinions. I just want you to be real.
Yeah.
Can you please be real?
Yeah. Like, yeah, that kind of authenticity. And I know when it's so funny because I remember saying to my husband recently in that conversation about authenticity, I was going, there are certain actors that I know and they're just even people that I would have had on on that. I did a few episodes of like a podcast when lockdown happened.
And I love it. You're really playing it down.
Yeah, because it was
called
felt
Year
like
of the Selfie, yeah. And it was a really good project for you to work on.
Yeah,
well.
it was lovely because I knew I was going back to filming, and I just wanted to bring artists together to have a conversation. For us all to level down a bit and go like, okay, like we all feel the same things, because we were all at ground zero. It didn't matter who you were or what kind of gigs you had coming up or anything. At that moment in time, we were all unemployed. So we all needed to kind of come together and see why are we actually doing this, you know? And yeah. I was kind of saying, there was even a few people on that podcast, actors and things, or artists, that I was going, those are people like, when I think of authenticity, I just, I see them and I go, I know you and I know what you're about. And that's what I like about you, because I just know what you're about. I don't feel like I'm going to get any surprises here.
And we don't have to agree.
Yeah, I don't have to agree. And we
don't have to be the same.
No, and we don't have to be the same age, same sexual orientation, same, come from the same area or anything. Yeah. But I know
what I see is what I get.
Yes.
And that's what people get from you.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. Oh, God, yeah. I hope so. Whereas I feel then, and then I feel sometimes, and I think that can really work to your advantage as an actor, because, you know, because when people talk about your brand and you're this, that's your brand. Your brand is who you are. It's that thing that you can't name. It's just that. And there's some actors who are constantly, you know, or artists who are kind of thinking, oh, if I try this, that'll make me famous. Or if I try this, they'll like me more. Mm. And it's like, and they're going further and further away from what actually makes them special and them unique
brilliant.
And all
yeah,
that.
That's it.
So I think that, yeah. So
and
I
that's
think,
a great reminder for all of us. Again, every time you're playing a part, for want of a better description, and you're not being yourself, you're denying who you really are. You're not, and that's going to chip away at your self-worth, because inside, you know, whether you want to, like I really love the practice of inner child work, you know, and I think inside there's the younger you screaming for attention. And if every time you deny it, you make them sad, because you're saying no to yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, this conversation has gone lots of different directions that I wasn't expecting, which I love. I love. And it's nice to have
1700 tangents over here.
Yeah, it's great. Hey, I'm all about the tangents. That's where the magic happens. Yeah, and I'm excited for you. You're obviously, it's all going on. You have a young family. So you're trying to do that and juggle, and you're riding the wave of really interesting work that I would imagine when you do shows like Line of Duty and, you know, the other shows and movies that you've done and the plays, it continues to lead on to more and more and more. Will you stay in Ireland, do you think?
Well, for the moment I will. Yeah, because I think like I started off in London and I came back here. So I started off in London and then this American film sort of brought me back here, and then I'd kind of written a one-woman show and that kind of got picked up, and then I started to get more and more work over here because so much was filming. So and what I kind of realize now, and a lot of actors in the UK are, you know, and beyond, kind of saying, you don't really need, you don't have to be in London or LA to get the work. You can get the work and then go out there. So in terms of support, like the amount of family support that we have, especially for the kids, is amazing. So I would like to stay.
Yeah.
But at the same thing, like I signed with a new agent in the UK recently, and she was going, what happens if you've got like if we have to kind of like move you out to somewhere for 6 months? I'm like, that's grand. Well, I'll move. And that's the great thing about the setup that myself and my husband have, is that we're kind of willing always to just go, okay, what's the next adventure? Where are we going now? You know, we're not kind of tied. We don't feel tied to any one place, which is really nice. But yeah, that's the thing, that's the open mind that I have to keep, that, you know, Ireland's very small, so it's not just here I'm kind of managing. I have to always keep my mind to the UK and the US and beyond, that there are, you know, loads of opportunities out there, because I think in this kind of small country you can get very in the little bubble and think that this is all there is, and oh, that person got that and I didn't get that. And, you know, so I'm constantly trying to kind of open my mind to all the kind of possibilities that are out there and not kind of stay too stuck.
Mm.
Yeah. And and as well, it's kind of even been with that role with Line of Duty and all that kind of came with that. And it's funny because it's like what I remember someone saying before, like new level, new devil, because you kind of, there's a sort of a leveling up that you have to say no to things that you would have said yes to previous, and you have to kind of you know, push yourself a little bit further. So there's all kind of those things that come along with, you know, with a really lovely gig like that as well. So yeah, it's new level, new devil, but ready for it.
yes you are, yes you are. Absolute pleasure to meet you. You're very cool, you're very talented, you're very sound, loved this chat. Thanks a million.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please do let me know by leaving a rating on Spotify, or you can leave a little comment on Apple as well. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.